Hola. Ay, Dios mío, it's Thursday. Time for Jackie's Vida Loca, where every week we divulge our Latino secrets, talk about our crazy Latino culture, gossip about our crazy Latino friends and relatives, and interview the craziest, the funniest Latino comedians on the Latino comedy scene. Welcome to my crazy life. Jackie's Vida Loca.
Locos, it's Thursday, and here we are again, and I'm so pleased to be telling you that my week has been absolutely insane. I've got to tell you what I've done this week, but before I do, I first want to tell you what the show is about today. It's about the job search, the job interview, being in the job, surviving. Listen, I know a lot of you are out of work, and you're probably killing yourself with the stress, you know? The bills are piling up. You look in the mirror, and you think to yourself, boy, I'm really a loser. But you're not. You're not. You have to get up your butt. You have to get motivated. And you have to have the right tips and the right information. Okay? So the purpose of this show today is not to just dish on the boss, because let me tell you something. We've all had the boss from hell. And I will tell you all about mine. They're in my past now. I will not mention the sinner. I will mention the sins. You know how it goes. But the purpose of this show today is to really provide you with expert advice. And my two guests, which I'm so excited about, and get this, they're the Hollywood it couple of recruiting, of job search and recruiting. It's Doris Aguirre and her husband, George Aguirre. And together they make up Dojo, okay? That's what we're going to call them from now on. But they really are phenomenal, and they specialize in the Hispanic market. But their tips are literally good for everybody, even if you're Chinese. It doesn't matter. Their tips will work. And they've had a tremendous amount of experience in the marketplace between them both. I think they've been in the marketplace for 10,000 years, telling people how to get a job. And so if that's what you're looking for, if you know, look, I'm sure that at least one of you, that you know somebody, at least one person, that is looking for a job. And so if you do, you need to download this show and give it to them, because all the inserted tips are going to be coming to you in just a short while. But let me tell you, this week has been insane. And one of the things that has made it totally different is the fact that I spent the entire morning yesterday at a seminary. You know what a seminary is? It's where all the cute priests go to become priests, okay? Now, I don't even know of a priest that's not cute, because they're all cute. For some reason, men in uniform just are amazing to me. But these guys are phenomenal. They're talented. They're smart. They're educated. I met one guy that literally got his undergraduate degree at Berkeley and his graduate degree at LMU, Loyola Marymount University, and now he's at the seminary. These are educated men that have a calling and a vocation in life. And you know something? My hat goes off to them. And even more so now, because I can't tell you that I had a particular idea about priests before yesterday. But let me tell you. You remember Father Odell? We interviewed him for the Easter show. If you didn't hear that that particular show, you have to listen to it. But Father Odell is amazing. And what makes him so fantastic is that he is progressive. He's part of the future, not the past of the church. He is part of the solution, not the problems of the church. Father Odell is one of the most positive individuals. He is always wearing a smile, and he always has something optimistic to say. But he is also a teacher at the seminary. He's a professor. And his class is called Homiletics. Now, I didn't know what that meant. It sounded like a chocolate milkshake. But I looked it up online, and homiletics, and then it all clicked for me, right? And then I stopped being hungry for a chocolate milkshake. But homiletics is a class where they teach priests to be how to give a homily. And a homily is basically a speech within the mass of the church. Okay? So this class is pretty much in speech giving and how to engage parishioners, how to engage listeners in the message. So that's what these folks are trying to learn. And what do you think they do? They bring me in, La Loca. I couldn't believe it. They brought me in to speak with these gentlemen and to give my perspective not just on religion, but on what makes an engaging speaker. And I was so impressed with them. And you know what? You know, La Loca, I'm not going to hold anything back, right? So I was totally honest. I was totally myself. I was not trying to be on my good behavior, because I figured if I'm going to drive all the way to Camarillo, which is literally 2 hours from where I am, if I'm going to drive all the way over there, they're going to get the benefit of the truth, the full La Loca in full swing. And so if any of you folks from the seminary are listening right now, I just want to send you a special welcome to the show, a special hello, and a special blessing from us. I don't know if we're allowed to bless you back. Are we allowed to bless you guys? I don't know. But I got blessed by 19 priests-to-be yesterday, and I'm feeling extremely blessed today. You know what? I got to tell you something. Good things are happening for me today, really good things. So I told you a long time ago that, and here's the other thing. Before I get into another subject, I got to tell you, it's so funny because I drove up to the seminary, and there's a gate there, and either they let you in or they don't, but you have to be let in, right? And I'm thinking to myself, they're not going to let me in. I haven't been to Mass in weeks, okay? Since Easter, I have not been to Mass. I'm not a good Catholic. And then when I got in there, they practically didn't let me leave. They wanted to keep me. I almost became a nun, people. I would be broadcasting right now from St. John's Seminary in Camarillo, if they were successful in converting me to a nun. And it came very close. But anyway, okay, so enough about that. I want to tell you that you may or may not know that I have actually, on my spare time, been writing a sitcom with my writing partner, Nora Garcia, who you've met on this show. And we have been working on this thing for 3 years. So don't get me wrong. It's really a passion project. And it's so freaking hysterical, and I'm so excited about it. And, you know, you spend so much time writing this stuff in your own little world, in your own little head, with very little input from the outer world. And I just want to tell you that we shared this with one of the biggest writers in TV history, okay, a very dear friend. Again, I'm not going to disclose names because people don't want to be, like, you know, brought out into the public. But anyway, the bottom line here is that we got such amazing feedback today, and that's why I'm so happy. I went to that seminary yesterday because they blessed me, and good things are happening, and I feel very blessed to have met them all. So let's get on with the topic of the show. We are here to talk about on the job, all the do's, don'ts, and why the hell not for not effing it up on the job and doing a good job. So let's get to work, okay? We're going to talk about crazy stories at work, like you did what at work? People, you need to listen up, okay? Because honestly, some of the things you do at work is beyond me. Like, first of all, you are not supposed to make out on the work premises. That is simply not allowed unless it's the boss. Because whatever the boss says, it is what goes. So if you're making out with the boss, which I'm not saying is a good idea, but if that's who you're making out with, then I guess it's part of the company rules, and that's okay, I suppose. But I'm sure if you asked our recruiter power couple, they'd probably say it's not a good idea. My personal opinion, and I've never actually made out on the job, but I wonder, it must be quite a thrill, because if you get caught, you're going to get fired, unless it's the boss, right? So I would say be careful in that territory. But, you know, you got to be careful what you do at work in general. Hold on. Because I'm losing my voice just talking. I'm getting so verklempt talking about this stuff. But anyway, what you don't want to do on the job, and I know a bunch of you do this, and you know you do it, so you're going to have to admit it, you are not allowed to take stuff home from work. That includes paper clips, liquid paper, 3M pads. You know, every single one of you out there has something at home that's from work that's not allowed to be there. And I would suggest that tomorrow morning, it's Friday, not a lot of people are paying attention on Friday, you bring all that stuff back and you put it back where it belongs, because it's not right to steal from the job. And by the way, it really is stealing. I'm not kidding. Human resources, if they catch you taking things home from work, they will literally consider that stealing, and you can be prosecuted. Now, do you really want to be prosecuted over a paper clip? And don't act all innocent, because I know you do it. You know what? I'm guilty. I've done it. I've brought home a pen, liquid paper. I brought home, you see, I'm talking from experience here, but it's not right, and it is considered stealing. And now that I have my own business, I can steal from myself. I can take all this stuff home whenever I want to, into my office whenever I want to. Okay. I'm going to talk to you next about interview basics, okay? Because, you know, by the time you actually get to the point of getting an interview with somebody, that means that somehow or other, by the grace of God, you've met their criteria for that particular job, unless you're making out with somebody else's boss and they bring you in. But we're not going to go there, right? But by the time you actually get a job interview, you need to pull your act together, okay? So I don't care what kind of a schlep you look like the day before. On the day of the interview, you need to pull all stops. I highly recommend getting a new outfit for the interview. And if you're Latina, you're going to do that anyway without my recommendation. You know that the first reason why you're excited about getting that job is because you're going to go to the mall and you're going to get at least one new outfit, which you'll probably never wear again unless you're smart and you get something that you can wear on various interviews. But you should get something that makes you feel amazing, that makes you feel confident, and that's appropriate for that job interview. And later when we talk to Doris and George, they're going to tell you what the right thing is to wear on a job interview, because not all job interviews are created equal, and the culture of a different particular company, all those cultures are different. So you don't want to show up looking like the wrong part, but you're going to learn later, and they're going to talk about how it's important to overdress a little bit. So anyway, we won't get into that because we'll leave that to them. But first of all, you need to dress the part. Secondly, you need to do your research. You know what? It is such a damn waste of time for the person interviewing you when you have not done your research. I will tell you right now, I have interviewed at least 100 people for different jobs in my career, at least 100 people. And I'm always impressed when people know things about my company, when they can actually tell me something that's in the news or something that I might not even know myself. You know, the latest stock, whatever that may be, boy, that means that that person is serious about getting that job and that they've done their homework. And the people that haven't done their homework, like I was working at an advertising agency. Somebody came in and asked me who our clients were, when that is so easy to check out online. And by the way, the World Wide Web is a treasure trove of information. And if you come in unprepared, shame on you. Shame on you for not preparing, because you know your ass is not getting that job. And everybody else sitting in the waiting room around you thinks you're an idiot, or at least assumes you're an idiot if you're not prepared. You must be prepared for these interviews. Like I said, by the time you get to that interview, maybe it's dozens, maybe it's hundreds of candidates that have been eliminated to give you that opportunity. And you know what? You want to talk about Catholic guilt or even Jewish guilt? You should feel guilty for taking somebody else's slot and going there not prepared. And take a shower. Take a shower before you interview. You think I'm kidding around? Not so long ago, I interviewed a guy that came in for that interview, and I will tell you, that guy smelled like a rotten fish. He had not had a shower in about, I would say, at least a week. He smelled disgusting. I couldn't concentrate on the interview because all I could think about was what was the last question I was going to ask that guy to get him the hell out of there, because I couldn't take it. So when you go to an interview, you got to present your best self. If you're a man, go get a haircut. And you know what? Another thing, men, you need to pay attention, because I know women care about this stuff, but men don't always think about this. Men should get a manicure. You think I'm kidding? You go in there with gross hands and you have a woman interviewing you, they're going to immediately notice that about you. That and the quality of your shoes. Are your shoes dirty? Are they clean? Are they polished? Are you well put together? Because how you present yourself in an interview is how people are going to assume you can do a job. So if you look disheveled, if your clothes are wrinkled, if your hair's a mess, if you got there late, what are they going to think? Your work is sloppy, you're always late on your projects, you don't know how to manage your time, you don't know how to manage other people's expectations, you don't take important meetings seriously. Hello? I hope you're paying attention. I hope you're paying attention, because these interview basics are things that really should be like second nature to people, and it's absolutely amazing that you got to tell people not to do some of these things, right? Okay. Listen, I want you to stay tuned, because we got a hell of a lot more where this came from. So stay with me. We'll be back in just 60 seconds.
Easy Way Broadcasting is the place to hear everything you need to know about entertainment and business. Now, you can see more about Eric Easy Zulli and all his connections through his online TV network, WTV Network. You can watch the latest videos and read the most up-to-date articles. Keep your eyes on WTV Network to see what's coming in the next few weeks. You'll see the newest web series and original talk shows. Follow Eric at Hollywood It Guy to find out what is new and what is happening in the upcoming weeks. For more information on WTV Network, go to www.thewtv.com.
Okay, So now we're going to get into, we're talking about all the things to do and not do on the job. We're talking about how to land a job. We're talking about how to get your act together and get you back to work. So I want you to listen closely to all the tips we have here today, and the upcoming tips that I'm going to share with you is what to wear and not to wear to work. Now, if you think I'm joking about some of these things, and you know I like to joke around, but if you think I'm joking about some of these things, think twice, because some of these things I've actually seen in the workplace. Okay? Now, some people work in very relaxed environments and, you know, creative environments, very casual environments, but there's always a particular decorum that you need to keep at work. Like, for example, ladies, you must always wear a bra to work. I don't care what your outfit is. I don't care if it's strapless, a strapless shirt under a suit or whatever. Do not ever think that you can come flopping around in the workplace. Because if I ever see that in my workplace, first of all, I'm going to put your ass on YouTube. That's the first thing I'm going to do. The second thing I'm going to do is fire you. Because there's no reason why anybody, except for your spouse, mate, loved one, has to see that. Just no reason. Unless you work at Playboy, you have to wear a bra to work. And by the way, one of the jobs I used to have was literally on top of the Playboy casting office. If you think I'm kidding, I'm not. They used to hold auditions in there for all those Playboy movies. And those girls used to show up flopping around all over the place. And I knew when they showed up that they weren't coming to interview for us. It's true. It really happened. Okay, so ladies, you have to wear a bra to work. You have to wear underwear to work. I know that this is, it should be common sense, but so many women don't understand the appropriate undergarments to wear in the workplace. So pay attention. The next thing, and this really applies more to men than women, because I think men do this more than women do. I think that men wear shorts to work more than women. Now, unless you're working around a pool, unless you're a lifeguard, there's no reason why you have to wear shorts to work. And casual Friday does not mean ripped T-shirt and shorts. It just simply doesn't. Use your common sense. Casual Friday means a little bit more casual than what you normally wear every day to work. It means if you normally wear a suit, let's say you work in a very formal environment, if you normally wear a suit, then on casual Fridays you can wear like a nice pair of slacks and a sweater, or a nice pair of slacks and a blazer. Maybe if your company allows it, you can wear jeans and a blazer, but it doesn't mean jeans and flip-flops. And if you're not sure about this, ask somebody. Like literally walk out the door, knock on your neighbor's door and ask them, do I look like an idiot or is this appropriate for casual Friday? Because if you're not sure and they say it's definitely not appropriate, get back in your house and change immediately before you get in that car and drive to work. Shorts should not be allowed in a professional workplace. Again, unless you have the kind of job that makes you wear shorts. Like if you are a lifeguard and you show up in a three-piece suit, you might get fired. Here's the other thing not to wear to work. Don't wear a Dora the Explorer T-shirt or any other caricature T-shirt that will give you a particular reputation. Now, you need to be careful of the T-shirts you wear, because I actually have a T-shirt that says, isn't it cute that you think I'm listening? And I'm very careful where I wear that T-shirt to. Like, I wouldn't wear that to work, because if I did wear that to a business meeting, I might get fired. And then what am I going to do? And if I wore that T-shirt without a bra and with shorts, I don't think they'd let me in. So you get the picture of what I'm trying to paint here. Ladies, you know, I know that you're dying to look good at work. And I know if you're single, there's probably somebody at work that you're trying to impress. But halter tops should not be allowed at work. Anything that ties around your neck, leave it vacation. There's an appropriate attire for camp, vacation, going out with your girlfriends, going out on the town, and all of those examples I just gave you are inappropriate for the workplace. So you need to get your act together and remember that you cannot just get home at 6 o'clock in the morning wearing your sparkles and drive into work like that. You have to get in, have a shower, and change. And don't be late. Don't be late changing. Forget the makeup that day. I know it's going to be tough. You know, you may want to do it on your drive and not get caught by the police, but don't be late for work if you've gone out partying the night before. Because you know what? And this is really a true story. When I worked at the Coca-Cola company, we partied like crazy. We all had a wonderful time when it was free time. But if we did not make that 7 a.m. meeting, we got in big trouble, and so it should be. If you want to party until 10 minutes before your meeting starts, that's entirely up to you. But when work time is work time, you show up ready for business. And that's the whole thing. So many people in the workplace act like it's girlfriend time or like it's, you know, let's just be casual. You know something? Here's a piece of advice. You cannot trust people at work like you do your friends. These are work associates. They're not personal friends. And even if you have a personal friend that's at work, let me tell you something, that bitch will rat your ass out if it's between you and her. When it comes to the workplace, keep your professional relationships just that. Keep them professional. Don't disclose personal tidbits about yourself that could come back to haunt you. I know it's very difficult that when you go out with your work friends for happy hour after work because you want to have that camaraderie and build the trust and everybody has three tequila shots, you want to lay it all out, how your husband beats the crap out of you, how your husband's out of work, how your sister is in jail. Okay, people, a word to the wise. Those are the kind of things you do not want to disclose to work associates. Because let me tell you something, the first opportunity any one of those people get to disclose that, because it's such juicy information, okay? You disclose that, and the first thing they're going to do after they get back from happy hour, they're going to kiss you, they're going to hug you, they're going to say goodbye to you at the valet parking, and then the next morning, the entire company is going to know that your stupid sister is in jail and that you told everybody at happy hour when you were standing on top of that table with your butt in the air. You know, just don't do it, because when you're with work people, it should always be professional. Professional. I've been in the workforce a long time, and I've managed to keep a darn good reputation, and that is because I'm smart enough to know that work things should be kept for work and personal things should be kept private. Private. It's okay to have close relationships at work, but never forget that you are in a professional environment and somebody can stab you in the back in 10 seconds. That could cost you your job. You could have legal issues and legal ramifications for your behavior. And let me tell you something. Let's talk about Facebook. Let's talk about Facebook. Let's talk about social media. And I'll tell you what, we get into this with Doris and George, and I can't wait to put them on the air. And they're coming in just a little bit. But here's the thing about Facebook, okay? And anybody who's my Facebook friend that's listening now, listen up and listen good. Because professional people scope you out on Facebook and you don't even know it. So if you're in a profession that people expect you to act with decorum, because if you're a stripper, don't worry about it, right? If your profession is murder, like you're a gangster or whatever, don't worry about it. But if everybody else, you need to think about this. Whatever you post on Facebook is for public consumption. Whatever your friends post on Facebook that comes out on your Facebook is for public consumption. So if your friends, not even you, if your friends are talking about smoking pot, getting trashed, going to a particular location that's questionable, doing questionable, guess what? It's as if you did it all yourself. And when your professional work associates get on your Facebook page and see your ass in the air and your boobs hanging out and you holding a drink and smoking a joint and all that crap that you may do on your free time that you feel compelled to have to put on Facebook for everybody else to applaud your amazing behavior, yep, your work knows all that crap. It is not private. Facebook is a public domain, public destination. And by the way, Facebook owns all your pictures. So you think all those pictures that are your property belong to you, you can do whatever you want with them? Not true. Facebook owns those pictures the minute you put them on Facebook, okay? So it's all public domain. So don't be an idiot is what I'm trying to say. Put on Facebook only the things that you would be proud your mother could see. And if you don't like your mother, think of somebody else because your boss is on there. Your clients are on there. Your patients are on there. Your best friends are on there. Friends that are not even your friends. Your enemies are on there. And that's the most dangerous part of all, because you know what? You got an enemy, they're going to go on Facebook and track all that crap. Now, here's the other thing I want to talk about. LinkedIn. So many people don't realize what an amazing platform LinkedIn is. LinkedIn is for any professional, and it is fantastic for keeping contacts over a period of time. But it's also fantastic for self-promotion. And that's one of the things that Doris is actually going to talk to us a little bit more about. But LinkedIn is a fantastic place, and if you want to be anybody in your lifetime, you need to get on LinkedIn. I don't care who you are. If you are a professional, you need to be on LinkedIn. If you want to get ahead in your career, you need to get on LinkedIn. You need to do all those things that are going to make you a more robust brand. And that's another thing that George is actually going to talk about, because I'm not going to steal his thunder. He is going to get into that in just a little bit. All right, so the next thing I want to talk about is your boss. Let's talk about the boss man, the boss woman, okay? Your boss basically is in charge of your life. You might think it's your spouse. You might think it's your family. You're wrong. Your boss is in charge of your life, because your boss can make your life a living hell. More than a spouse. More than a spouse, your boss can really get the best of you. So you need to have a great relationship with your boss. And let's pretend you hate your boss, right? Let's pretend you hate your boss. Well, a little tidbit here. If you hate your boss, you better start learning what to like about your boss. You have to figure that out and have to get around that stuff, because your boss is in charge of your destiny to a great degree. I'm not saying you're not in charge of your destiny and you hand it all over to your boss and then use your boss as the crutch and the excuse for why you're so damn miserable. Look, if you hate your boss that much and you hate your job that much, get the hell out. And we're going to talk about when you know it's the right time to get the hell out. But if you really, really don't have a good relationship with your boss, you better find out a way to have that, and don't leave it to your boss to figure that out, because they won't. The only thing they'll figure out is how to get the hell rid of you. And they'll go through all the legal steps to get the hell rid of you over time, and you won't even know what's happening until you fix a relationship with your boss. Now, you may very well have the boss from hell. Believe me, I've had my share of bosses that were less than exemplary. But it is your responsibility as the subordinate in that mix to figure out something you can like about your boss. Because you may hate everything. You may think you hate everything about your boss. And I will tell you that unless you've spent a little bit of time with your boss, you don't know them well enough to find something that you can like about them. You've only spent the amount of time that you found you can hate everything about them, and that's probably just at work. So, again, unless you're making out with the boss. And we weren't going to talk about that, were we? But we're talking about a real boss and a real boss-subordinate relationship. A real boss-subordinate relationship is your responsibility, not necessarily just the boss's responsibility. Yes, they need to offer you leadership and guidance, and maybe they're not doing that. But as long as they're your boss, you need to find a way to get in their good graces and become the boss's pet. Because otherwise, if they're not gunning for you, they're gunning against you. And it will happen. And I have been many people's bosses in my life. And it's the people that try to work hard and show that they are committed to the job and do a good job and be responsible that I migrate toward. But I'm a good boss. There are some bosses that don't appreciate good work and don't appreciate you as a person. But even still, they're still your boss. So as long as they're your boss, you have to find a way to get along with them and find a way to find what they're really looking for. And who knows, maybe what they're looking for is for you to kiss their ass. Do it. Do it. It's your job. It's part of the job. And if you don't want to do it, get the hell out of the job. When do you know it's the right time to leave a job? Okay, if you're literally lighting your hair on fire every morning in your job, it's time to leave. If you wake up every morning and think that it's better if the ground swallows you alive than getting in your car and going to work, it's the right time to leave. If somebody else is making out with the boss and they blamed it on you, it's the right time to leave. If you have been cited for sexual harassment in a particular job, get the hell out before they get rid of you. So it's the right time to leave. If you hate your job so much that you're thinking of jumping off a cliff, leave. It's the right time to leave. If you feel that you're not being respected at work and you've been discriminated upon, or you feel like you've been overlooked for a particular position because of your age, your race, your color, your creed, your sexual orientation, it's not only the right time to leave, it's the right time to find an attorney and stand up for your rights. It is the right time to leave when you absolutely effing hate your job so much that you'd rather be dead. So it's not the end of the world to leave a job. It really isn't. And sometimes it's the best thing that could happen to you. You know, one of the things I promote on my show, Jackie's Vida Loca, Loquitos, is to be fearless and to stand up for the things you believe are right. And I know I do a hell of a lot of joking around on this show. But at the end of the day, it's really truly about fearlessness and self-respect and doing the right thing for you and for your family and for yourself. And I have been in jobs in my past where I really, most of my jobs have been fantastic, but there have been little jobs here and there that honestly, I just didn't know how I was going to get out of bed every morning and go to that damn job. And then I left. And honestly, so many other doors opened up. And I'm not saying be a quitter. No, 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 no. You don't throw out the dirty water until you have clean water. I'm saying get your resume brushed up. Hook up with the recruiters I'm going to introduce you to on the show and start planning your exit. You know what I mean? An exit with grace and dignity. Don't just throw, you know, don't just turn your desk over and light the place on fire on the way out. Because, by the way, that comes back to haunt you. If you light the place on fire on the way out, what I mean is you burned every bridge there and everybody hates your damn guts and you're leaving kicking and screaming, you can expect not to be hired for like the next 30 years, and then you're going to need some sort of a retirement job, like welcoming people at Walmart might be one of them, or cleaning a pool, you know, or maybe being in the library, like putting the books back. You will not have a career if you burn the bridges. So no matter how much you hate the people at your work, and I'm sure you hate them deeply, but no matter how much you hate these people, don't burn a bridge, because those same people are the same people who can give you a reference later. And you know, sometimes what I've noticed in different jobs is like there are certain people that you think you hate them and they hate you. It's not true. It's just that they're as miserable as you are and they just display it in a different way. But when you get everybody out of that environment, all of a sudden years later you're friends with these people and they're supporting you and helping you. So it's sometimes it's not necessarily the people. It's just a toxic work environment. And I know we've all been in that. So what I'm going to say is stick around. In another 30 seconds, we're going to get back into why it's okay to lie in the job. Listen up.
Do you want a stronger internet presence and social media following for you or your business? Eric Easyzuli and his company, Easy Way Entertainment, can help you get discovered. Go to www.easywaybroadcasting.com for prices and packages that can help you take control of your internet presence and gain marketing exposure.
Okay, so you know that you are going to listen to an interview very shortly from George and Doris Aguirre, two amazing, amazing resources if you're looking to get and keep a job. And I will introduce them shortly to you. But before we do that, I want to tell you those situations when it's okay to lie to your boss, right? And you think I'm nuts, right? You think I'm crazy by saying, oh, it's all right to lie. Look, it's never okay to lie, but it's always okay to make sure you're not disclosing BS. For example, everybody needs a day off. Everybody needs a day off, and those days off, like Easter vacation, they don't always come when you need it to come. Sometimes you just need a day off because you've had it, because you're burnt out, because you're exhausted. You know what? You don't want to go into your boss's office and say, I had it. This place is killing me. You're killing me. You're ugly. I can't stand you. I can't stand this damn place. I'm going to kill myself if I keep working here one more day. You don't want to do that. What you want to do is go in there and say, you know what? I need a medical day off. I need a day off tomorrow or whenever it is, and it's better not to ask for it tomorrow. It's better to ask for it with plenty of time anticipation. I need a medical day off, whatever that might be, you know, if you had a doctor's appointment or whatever. Take a medical day off. You get a medical day off. And you don't need to tell your boss that you're going to kill yourself if you show up one more day there. You can just tell your boss, I need a medical day off, and then you can go take your day and go heal yourself is what I'm trying to say. But you don't want to disclose to your boss that you're at the brink of explosion, Because when you get off that day, when you've had your day off and you want to get back to work, you want people to have a nice receiving line for you and not show you the door and have your desk cleared out while you're away. Here's another thing that you do not want to tell your boss. You don't want to tell your boss your personal problems. I can't believe that people literally sit in front of their bosses and tell them, the reason I can't do this task that you've given me is because my dog ran away, my cat is sick, my husband's lost his job, I have a stomach ache. Oh my God, you know what? Tell it to the Marines, because honestly, I think the Marines would rather hear from you than your boss. Boss doesn't want your litany of problems. They don't want to know that you're depressed. They don't want to know all your personal BS. And this is the truth, people. I'm just telling you like it is. And it's because I love you that I tell you these things. I sound like my mother now. Okay? It's because I love you, locals, that I'm telling you the truth. The truth of the matter is your boss wants to know that you've done what they've given you to do. They don't want to know that the reason you haven't done that is because of these 60 personal issues you've run into along the way. Now, if you've run into work-related issues that provide a barrier for you to get that particular task done and to get it done on time with stellar results, then, of course, you need to tell your boss with plenty of time. But here's what I've always hated. When people come in and say, oh, you know what, I have a problem, I can't get it done, so-and-so is telling me they don't want to do what we've asked them to do. You know what? That's BS. And when I get that, I think to myself, okay, where's the solution? Don't go to your boss with problems. Go to your boss with solutions, because they've given you a task and they want you to solve it. They want you to get it done. And they've given it to you, brain surgeon, because you have the capability to do it. Believe me, a boss is not going to give you a task they don't think you can do. So they're going to give you something that's going to resolve it for them, get the crap done, and they know that they can close their eyes and just have you take care of it. So that's what you need to do. And if you cannot take care of it, you need to go back and say, look, I can't take care of it because of this, but here's what I think we need to do. And here's your role in it, Mr. Boss. I need your help in clearing this path, opening this door for me, maybe writing a note to somebody, whatever it might be. But keep it simple and solution-focused. Solution-focused. Okay, it's not okay to go to your boss with a million personal problems. And let's talk about crying in front of the boss. Okay, because I know, and we're going to talk about crying with Doris and George, and they're going to give you a perspective too. But here's the thing. If you want to cry on the job, you better be in a private place. I don't care if it's the basement, the bathroom, but not the boardroom. Do not cry on the job. I know we all get emotional. I'll be the first to admit it. And there are certain times where you just cannot help the waterworks. And when that happens, and men, you too, because I know you cry on the job too. Whoever is crying on the job should be doing it in private. Take some tissues with you. Don't go back to your desk or whatever with mascara running down your face. And that's for the ladies, not for the men, obviously. Who knows? But you need to keep a particular decorum at work. It is so uncomfortable. I don't mind if somebody shows a little emotion or shows a warm spot in their heart for something. Or maybe, you know, maybe we're all sort of mourning the loss of something or someone. Okay, there are a few exceptions. But for the most part, if you're always crying on the job, that means that's another sign you have to get the hell out. And if you're always crying on the job, you need to think about your like internal fortitude of being able to handle pressure on the job. You may be too stressed out. But it is so uncomfortable for a boss to deal with somebody who's always bawling their eyes out and always getting, you know, completely emotionally bent out of shape. I hate to tell you people, but businesses are in business to make money. They're not in business to counsel you. And I know that seems a little harsh, but sometimes you people have to hear it. It is the truth. Emotions, unless they're shouts of victory that you've won a new account, please keep the tears of sorrow in a private place. And I'm not saying you shouldn't cry in the job. You can cry. Just go somewhere that nobody's going to see you. Okay, people, I know I've given you some real pearls of wisdom here, but I have given you nothing in comparison to the serious discussion we are going to have with George and Doris Aguirre. Now, I want you to pay attention. I want you to get a piece of paper and a pen, your iPad, whatever you need to do to take notes on this. And really, really benefit from this information. I think you're going to love it. Okay, Lupita, so I'm here with the dynamic duo of getting and keeping a job. Known in Hollywood as JoJo, Doris and George Aguirre, the recruiting and coaching power couple, we have them on the show with us today to give you expert pearls of wisdom. First, we have Doris Aguirre, principal of DCA ProSearch, recognized by Ad Age as one of the top recruiters in the U.S. DCA Professional Search specializes in the area of Hispanic advertising and marketing. Founder Doris Aguirre has directed the firm's growth and incredible success since 1995. She has an impeccable track record of delivering expert talent to her clients, 95% of which are repeat or referred. Prior to establishing DCA ProSearch, Doris was General Sales Manager of Spanish Information Service, SIS, one of the first national Spanish radio networks in the country. With close to 18 years of executive search experience working within the Hispanic advertising and marketing industry, Doris has developed one of the strongest networks of both clients and industry professionals. And then we have George Aguirre, President, Optimal Business Solutions. It's a firm that specializes in executive management, recruiting, and coaching. With over 12 years' experience in the industry, George has created a remarkable network of executive professionals with strong personal brands, and we're going to talk about that. As a recruiter, he provides companies with the best industry professionals that have helped establish brands in the marketplace and position them to attract the purchasing power of diverse target markets throughout the U.S. As a coach, George helps candidates develop their own strong personal brands through his ability to look beyond the obvious and teaches them how to become more desirable to employers throughout the marketplace as well as within their own company. He looks at the total picture and dissects the various actions you need to take to make companies want to hire you. George is a graduate of University of Texas at Dallas School of Management. Welcome, George and Doris. Welcome to our show.
Thank you very much, Jackie. It's a pleasure to be here on Jackie's Vida Loca, and we hope that we provide to your listeners great tips that will be of value and service to them.
You know, I'm absolutely sure you will, but I'm going to start with George and ask him a question about this whole personal brand thing, because I know it's critical, but I want to know how you help people develop their strong personal brands and why that is so important.
Well, hi, Jackie. Thank you so much for getting us on board with you. You know, the personal branding thing, actually, it is more and more valuable to you as social media becomes more and more valuable or pervasive in the industry, in the economy. One of the things I'd like to say is before you go out and build yourself your profile, make it a purposeful, mission-based profile, because social media can be a double-edged sword. If you build your profile without knowing where you're going, it can cut both ways. If you develop your profile or even go out and build your resume before knowing where you're going, you might be sending the wrong message or sending a message that isn't receivable, meaning that if you don't know what the employer needs and then you start talking about yourself and everything you can do, then you might lose an opportunity to actually deliver what valuable skills and experience you have that the employer might need. Actually, that's called the push, pull, and put method. Employers use the pull method while 80% of candidates use the push method, where candidates try to push everything they know onto an employer, and the employer just says, wait, stop. I just need what I need. This is why I'm going out to the market and hiring the person to come in and fix my problems, and these are my problems. It's a good thing to address what the employer needs.
Doris, you and I met through social media. You're a social media guru when it comes to job search, and I'd like you to share with people what's the most impactful way that people who are looking for a job can use social media in actually landing a job.
Jackie, I can't stress enough in this day and age how important social media is. Recruiters and potential employers are out there, and they will look you up. You will be Googled. So you must be certain that what comes up about you shows you in a positive light. You know, you want to have your profiles on the sites that get high rankings. Some of these sites are LinkedIn, which is where we met, Facebook,
right.
And Twitter. You should also comment on the sites and blogs with high rankings. In my industry, for instance, you have Ad Age, Adweek, Recruiters Online. Whenever you comment on any of the articles, your comments will appear when there's a Google search as well. There are certain websites that you can also work with that will help you brand yourself, and your listeners should write these down because they would probably want to look these up afterwards. Visibility.com, and that's visibility with a Z, V-I-Z-I BILITY.com, brandyourself.com, and lookuppage.com. All of these get very, very high rankings when somebody Googles you. And when you have your profiles on there, they will come up. This is especially true if you have a very common name. You want to make yourself get up into those rankings easily so that it's not somebody else's information that comes up, but yours. With visibility, for instance, you will get to choose up to 5 Google results that will appear when someone clicks on your visibility URL, which you can include in your email signature.
I think that's wonderful that you're sharing these sort of insider tricks of the trade because, you know, I think so many people just literally think that, okay, I'm going to brush up my resume and I'm going to go get myself a job. And they don't realize how much social media impacts. We have an intern at Jackie's Vida Loca. She had never perused LinkedIn as a young college soon-to-be graduate. And I said to her, the first thing you need to do is build your profile and get on there and start making contacts. You know, social media isn't just to connect with your friends about going out on Friday night. Social media is where you can make a good impression or not.
That's right. And you definitely want to do this, like George mentioned earlier, before you have to look for a job. You want to get yourself known as a subject matter expert by using all the media tools that are available to you. A lot of people don't realize this, but the statistics are that 93% of recruiters are using LinkedIn to discover talent.
Wow.
66% use Facebook, and 54% use Twitter. So don't take the social media lightly when it comes to branding yourself and getting yourself known. This is one of the best ways to do that.
The main message here is be careful what you put on these social media sites because it's not just social, it's professional.
That's true, Jackie. And what's happening is a lot of potential employers are asking candidates to friend them on Facebook because they want to see who you are associating with. They also want to see the types of comments and the types of pictures you're posting. Currently, there are still no legal grounds one way or the other right now. So a lot of companies are doing this. So you definitely want to make sure you don't have anything questionable on your Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Always present yourself professionally and morally and ethically correct, whether it's personal or on a professional level, because this may come back to haunt you later on. And I've heard of many people that have been let go due to comments that they put about their current employers.
Oh, absolutely. And here's the thing. Dime con quién andas y te digo quién eres. Tell me who you hang with and I'll tell you who you are. It's also like, you know, what your friends post on there, so you have to be so careful. Oh my goodness.
The picture that you use on all these sites, try to have a very good-looking picture of your face and make sure to use that same picture throughout your various social sites. The reason for that is because as soon as they see the picture, they automatically remember the brand. The continuity is very important.
Absolutely, and whenever anybody asks my opinion on this, and I do coach the college set on a regular basis, and when they ask me about this, I say take a professional picture because they look so much better, at least take a picture that looks like it's professionally done. You know, if you're standing with somebody and the picture looks like you've cut them out of your picture, and you're like, you got your arm around somebody, but your arm looks cut off, and you look like you were at a party, it just doesn't give the best impression. Obviously, social media has become the primary calling card when people want to get your professional background, but resumes are still important. So I want to ask, George, let's talk about resume perfection. What do you believe are some of the tricks to making your resume stand out? Because, you know, there's millions of other resumes out there potentially vying for the same role that you want.
Follow a simple strategy. Before you go out and create your resume, which most people do, they say, yeah, I have my resume ready, but they don't really know what the employer needs, and you've heard me say this before. But here's a trick. Here's a strategy. Go out on the Internet. There's websites like Indeed.com. Okay, and do a search for your job title. It doesn't matter where these jobs are in the country because that's not your interest right now. Pick about 10 or 20 jobs. Focus on the requirements and the wording used in the job descriptions. Use the same language in the job description to describe your relevant skills and experience in your resume. And this is where you need to understand how a recruiter works or an employer works. Since we use the pool method, we use an applicant tracking system software. So what happens is when we input the data of these are the requirements that we want to bring out the resumes that meet that criteria. For example, my database is 45,000 entries of 45,000 people in my database. When we input the data of what we need, then it pulls out, let's say, 150. And then we drill down even further to make sure that the people that we're going to call have the corresponding skills and experience. Now, remember this, we don't find people jobs. We find people who match client criteria. the people that pay us are the employers, the corporations, to find the needle in the haystack.
I think what you just said is brilliant. Basically, go into all these job boards, see how they write up other jobs that sort of match up what you do, and then pepper your resume with those particular words that keep coming up so that when you want to go for a job you want, your resume is full with all the words that you guys are searching around. That's brilliant. And, you know, the other thing, too, is when you go for a particular job and you revise your resume for that particular job, I think that's very smart, too, because you can pepper your resume with the job description of the job you're going for, and all of a sudden they look at your resume and say, my gosh, she's perfect.
Exactly. Right on. Bingo.
Can I add one thing to that, Jackie? It's important to, aside from sprinkling all the words and mentioning the experience, you want to also list your measurable accomplishments in the resume. Don't just say that you are an award-winning creative director, for instance. List the awards you've won. Don't just say that you are responsible for company billings increases. List the percentage of increases and the clients. So you do want to have some measurable results in there.
So basically, scan your resume and make sure you have more numbers, more quantifiable measures of actual accomplishments versus tasks.
Exactly.
Doris, you have exposure to so many searches and have been doing this for so long. And you know that Americans today, so many Americans are looking for a job, many of which are listening to the show. There's so many things you can do in a job search. Tell me, what do you think are the 5 top mistakes people make that basically get them nowhere?
Well, one of the things that a lot of people are doing still is they are writing a generic resume, a one-size-fits-all type of thing. You need to really customize it. Also, one of the things that you need to do is when you get into an interview, don't start by just talking about yourself without really knowing what the potential employer is looking for. The best thing to do is to have a 2 to 3 minute introduction about yourself. This is normally referred to as your elevator speech. And if a potential employer asks you, hey, tell me about yourself, start with your 2 to 3 minute intro, then stop and ask them if they have a little bit more into the position, letting you know what they feel are the most important requirements so that you can address each one of those areas with your experience. You might be interviewing with 2, 5 people. Each person from each different department will have something different to tell you. So you want to make sure and ask each person, you know, try to take notes without losing too much eye contact. By getting this information first, you will always hit the target when you speak versus throwing a lot of fluff in the air and never really knowing if you are saying the right things. Also, going in with an I-know-it-all attitude and not demonstrating enthusiasm and energy during an interview is another no-no. If you're not sure you want the job, you still want to show enthusiasm because you want the opportunity to turn it down, not to be turned down.
If you were sent by a recruiter, call a recruiter the hour after the interview and tell them, hey, I really like this job. I really like this company. I really like the people that I interviewed with. But don't wait 2, 3, 4 days because it gives that strong message that, I just didn't really like that job, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many ways for people to kill an interview. And I want to ask you, George, what do you think is the biggest mistake people make during the interview outside of showing their lack of interest? Like, what is the thing that people say? Maybe they don't even know they're committing interview suicide, but what do you think that is?
When you get to the interview, be nice to everybody. From the start, when you walk in the door, be nice to the receptionist. People forget that because receptionists may go back in after you leave and say, gosh, that guy was mean. Make sure that you convey your skills and experience that relate to the job versus conveying a lot of things that are irrelevant because you don't necessarily get a second chance.
When the employer tells you about particular requirements for the position, a lot of times candidates will say, yes, I can do that. I have that experience. Okay. Well, tell me about it. They forget that they need to provide an example to demonstrate how they use that experience. So it is extremely important to have 2 or 3 case studies that you can go through from start to finish.
You know, I spent 10 years at the Coca-Cola company, and basically they have this process called the SAR process, S-A-R. So
exactly.
For every single question that they ask you in an interview, you have to give the situation, which is the S, the action that you took, which is the A, and the result. So how did it turn out? What actually happened? How much did you grow? You know, you get that process totally entrenched in your head, and now any interview I would go to, after Coca-Cola, I answer every question. In fact, in my house, my husband asks me something, and I give him the situation, the action, the result.
That's great if you have a logical husband. You're right about that. As a matter of fact, I use that STAR method with the candidates. I always tell them, use the STAR method. I think it's tasks for the team.
You can go into the interview with something like that in writing, your cheat sheet. There's nothing wrong with that. Whenever the opportunity comes, you can go back to your little list of examples and hit all the points you really want to make in that interview, right?
Definitely.
People say, I was hired by the CEO to do X, thinking that, well, if I drop the name of the CEO because the CEO recruited me, that gives me credibility. No, it doesn't. Tell me what you ex did.
Do you guys think that people should wear muumuus to an interview?
Wear muumuus?
Because I conducted an interview with somebody once, and they came in wearing a muumuu, and I'd never forgotten this woman wearing a muumuu to an interview. Clearly, that was inappropriate. You know, what is...
Career suicide, Jackie.
Exactly. It was definitely interview suicide. My question is really a serious one. When you go on an interview, you want to look professional, but so many jobs today are a more relaxed, casual environment. They may even have a dress code that is casual. So the question is, should you overdress and look professional in a suit or whatever, or should you go to this interview dressed in whatever the tone of the company is?
Remember the tennis team that went to the White House, and they all wore flip-flops. And they asked them, why would you wear flip-flops? And they said, well, we thought that was dressing up. Yeah, don't wear flip-flops to an interview.
This was a client, and she told me that the candidate wore tight black pants with a tight black shirt. She was dressed more like for a happy hour with the girls versus an interview. So she did not impress the client, and it caused such a bad impression. You know, she was not hired, even though she had the experience they wanted. She was everything they wanted. You should know also that a lot of clients are also conducting Skype interviews nowadays when the candidate is in another state. So when you have a Skype interview, be sure to dress as if you were going to an in-person interview. You want to have a clean background, no noise or disturbances. Once again, I had a client who conducted a Skype interview, and the candidate wore a shirt with spaghetti straps. So now I have to make sure and tell people about all these things that you think is common sense. It's always a little bit better to dress above the norm of what everybody else is dressing within the organization. You should know a little bit about the culture of the organization as well, because you don't want to super overdress either.
Doris, you're a recruiter, and there are many recruiters out there. How should people build a relationship with you? What's your preference?
It is important, definitely, to maintain a relationship with a recruiter. First, you want to find a recruiter that specializes in your area, and always send your resume. Be very upfront with your recruiter about your actual experience, any reasons for leaving a job, your compensation, or anything that might come out during a background check. If relocation would be an issue, don't let that come up after the interviews are over. Make sure to keep your recruiter informed of any changes. If you move or you have a new job, because we like to keep our database updated. When we send you out on an interview, call us, tell us what happened. We know we don't want to find out afterwards that the client called you and we were never kept in the loop by the candidate. Make sure to always keep us in the loop. Don't use an offer that you get from our client to try to get a counteroffer from your current company. That will definitely get you off the radar of a recruiter really fast.
I bet.
Just stay in touch with us. We are always there to be your advocate. We're successful when you're successful.
Make sure that you do send your resume to the corresponding recruiters. Why? Because it's easier to quietly and silently advertise what you can do while you have a job versus having to yell it out from the unemployment lines.
Absolutely. Do you think your candidates are more appealing when they already have a job, or do you think it doesn't matter?
I can definitely tell you that the candidate is more appealing when they have a job. If they have been out of a job for a while, that's okay, but they should continue doing some freelance work, even if you have to volunteer your time. And one other thing I want to add is that if we are successful in getting you into an interview, make sure you're well prepared and do your homework. Because lack of preparation would be detrimental to the trust relationship with your recruiter. And another thing is, don't play hard to get with the recruiter, and definitely not with the client. You want to keep appointments and return calls quickly. One of the biggest turnoffs to a recruiter is lack of courtesy from the candidates regarding communication. So a lack of courtesy on the candidate's part will be remembered by the recruiter. But likewise, enthusiasm, courtesy and interest will also be remembered and will be appreciated.
We spend hundreds of thousands of dollars in education. So when you are in front of an employer Think about it. Everything you've ever done in life is for the opportunity to be at that point exactly where you're standing in front of an employer to get that specific job. Don't throw it away.
You're an executive coach, George, and some executive coaches, I'm not saying you do this, charge candidates a significant fee, thousands of dollars, and then promise them they'll find them a job. Now, that sounds like, you know, in retrospect, if you're going to be making several thousand dollars in your job, then I can see people rationalizing and saying, well, hey, if this guy promises to get me a job, I may as well give him $3,000-$4,000 so that they can find me and guarantee me that job. Is it really possible for an executive coach to promise candidates a job?
You know, this happens more often than not, and I'm totally against it. I'm not against executive coaches. They do offer a valuable and very valuable service, but the jobs are not theirs to sell or give. That's the employer's job. If you feel that you need a coach, understand the value that the coach can bring to you. But do not go into a company where the coach promises you a job because the job isn't his to give.
One of the things that you mentioned to me early on, that getting a job and starting with a company is very much like getting into a marriage. I thought that was a great analogy. So can you tell me how the two are similar and why chemistry is so important?
You're spending so many hours at a job. In fact, you're probably spending more hours at a job than you are at home with your wife or husband. And so, therefore, you want to be with people who you like to be with. Because while a person can bring in the production factor 100% capacity, but reduces others' capacity to 50% through the conflict, then the rate of loss exceeds the rate of gain for an employer.
What you're basically saying is that if you're a pain in the ass, you basically stop productivity in your company, and you're not an asset, you become a liability.
Great choice of words.
I'm just trying to crystallize it for our listeners. People hire people they like. You take two candidates, one falls in the pain in the butt category, and the other one doesn't. But the one in the pain in the butt category is even more qualified than the other one, who's nice. They're going to go with a nice person, right?
Exactly. If a person brings out the best in other people, that's an asset in itself.
Now, you guys have been doing this for years. You've probably seen it all. I want to share with our listeners some of the crazy, you don't have to mention names, you don't have to say the sinner, you just have to say the sin. But what are some of the craziest things you guys have seen?
I had a candidate go to an interview, and I don't know why he did this, but I think he was probably coming from a formal occasion, and he wore a tux. But something happened to his suspenders, and the suspenders loosened, and his pants fell.
Really?
During the interview.
Oh, my God. See, I thought this was totally going in a different direction. I thought they were going to say he was overdressed, but he was basically underdressed.
Underdressed, literally.
Oh, my God. Oh, what an idiot.
So, obviously, he wore the wrong attire for the interview. Ended up losing his pants during the interview.
That's a story I will recount for the rest of my life.
This literally happened. Obviously, there was no second interview.
They didn't need a second interview. They saw everything they needed to see. Okay, so I interviewed this guy once. Again, not mentioning any names. He showed up, super nice guy. But as nice as he was, he literally hadn't had a shower, I want to say, in a week. The odor, like, I wear a lot of perfume, Doris.
Mm-hmm.
And George, honestly, when I put perfume on, there's a whole cloud of perfume. Not even my perfume was able to ward off the smells that came from this gentleman that was super nice and probably qualified, but I couldn't think straight. We need to know ourselves before we go into these interviews and make sure we do a quality control check.
And you would think as recruiters, we shouldn't have to mention every basic thing that seems to be common sense, but it's surprising. We should, because there are a lot of people that don't understand or realize how important some of these things are.
You know, we Latinos, we're very emotional, very, very passionate people. And it doesn't take much to make us cry. I know for myself, you know, you tell me something emotional or whatever, and the tears well up. Is it appropriate or inappropriate to let your emotions show in this process? Is it okay to cry on the job or cry in an interview?
No, not during an interview, not after an interview, not before. Meaning, you know, you bring up a question there. An employer is hiring you, and they say, how would you handle this situation? when you respond to that question, you can say, well, Mr. Employer, I would handle it this way. However, when I am working for you, I will handle it according to the terms and conditions that the company dictates. That could be totally different than the way you would personally handle it.
George, that's brilliant. That tells a potential employer that you are willing to follow the company agenda and that you're not going to necessarily have this separate agenda once you go in there like the new sheriff in town going to take over. All right, let's go back to the crying thing because...
I can say something about the crying thing.
You can?
Now, let's say during the interview, there's a question and somehow along the line, it comes up that your abuelita died or your mom just passed away. You know, the emotions definitely will show. Now, for something like that, I don't think there will be anything, any negative points against you. If anything, it shows that you have the emotions that they have as well. So it all depends what we're talking about and if you're crying sobs versus just, you know, a small tear that comes down as you talk about your abuelita or whatever.
So basically, if they need to go get a blanket to dry your tears, it's not a good sign. When I interviewed for one of my positions at Coca-Cola, the gentleman I was interviewing with, he had lost his father. I had lost my father when I was young, and we both literally got teary. So as long as the other person's crying too, it's okay. Because I got the job. But the reason I bring up the crying thing, guys, is because I went on an interview, and I didn't cry during the interview this time. I didn't cry. But I cried after the interview because I felt like I had done a terrible, terrible job. Well, sure enough, of course, they called me back in, completely to my surprise. How often does it happen that we have a perception of how an interview goes and it's really not the correct perception? Or does our gut never lie?
I think on LinkedIn there's a fabulous advertising right now where this gentleman is an artist and he asks people to sit down without ever seeing them. And he says, please describe yourself. And the person describes themselves and then he paints them accordingly to what their description of themselves is. And then he sends them outside where they meet another individual, and then he brings that other individual in, and he says, please describe the person that you just met. And then he paints another drawing of the way the next person described them. And then he compares the images, and the way the person described themselves was not as good looking as the picture of the other person. And so
wow.
We do the same thing. We're our worst saboteurs. The recruiter is a good center point that you can ask him, hey, how did I do? And he can give you better feedback.
When you do feel that you missed something during the interview, remember that there is still that ever important follow-up thank you later. And as a matter of fact, one of my previous employers told me that the reason I got the job with her was due to my follow-up letter. You're still in sales mode when you use that thank you letter. So you want to reiterate once again why you're the right candidate. And if you have a question that you missed telling about some of your experience, you want to mention that in that letter. That thank you letter needs to go out that day or the next day. You know, I've had several clients coming back to me and telling me that the reason that they hired that candidate was because they had such great follow-up. This basically tells them how you follow up with any client.
Do you think it's better to send an email right away, or do you think it's better to send a handwritten note that may take a day or two to get there?
The personal note is so rare nowadays that it definitely adds that extra touch. So if you can do both, I recommend doing both.
Use a 1-2 punch approach there. The reason being is if you send an email, it gets there immediately.
Right.
So it shows enthusiasm that you were very much interested in the job. If you just send a thank you note and it takes a week to get there, and you don't want that because they can make a decision within that week, when you send a thank you note, it also does the value that it keeps your name in front of them. If they forgot that they interviewed you a week ago and you get this really nice little handwritten note, it reminds you, oh, yeah. And so it keeps your name in front of them.
That is really, really smart because they're going to feel very guilty throwing away that thank you note. The Catholic guilt, it's a perfect thing. We all know that if you land a job, there's going to come a point in time where you're going to have to talk money. And it's a subject so many people are terrified to talk about and to state exactly what their needs are. So what is the most critical mistake people make in discussing salary with a potential employer?
There's a way you respond to that. When an employer asks you, what are your salary requirements? He's asking that because he wants to know that you are within the salary range of the position. It's just a filtering question. And here's how to answer that question. always know the salary range of the position you're going after. On the internet, you'll see a bunch of jobs, and if they don't mention a salary range for the position, then be careful. Odds are it is not a legitimate job. And there's employers out there that they don't really have an open job. They just, to keep their name out there, or publicity, or whatever excuse they have, they'll just put bogus jobs up there. So answer a question with a question. If they ask you, what are your salary range requirements? Then you answer, what is the salary range of this position? If it's a legitimate job, you'll say, it is between X and Y. Jackie, play with me.
Jackie, play with me.
Okay, so we're doing this. Okay, gotcha. No, I'm ready. I'm ready for action here. Okay, so ask me again.
So what are your salary requirements?
What is the salary range for this position, George?
Bingo. So then I say, it's between 90 and 100. Your response then should be, great, I'm well within that range. But if you answered 110, then you're out of a job.
Maybe you don't want to go for that job. Maybe you say to them, look, I really appreciate you contacting me, and if I know of somebody, I will absolutely turn them your direction, but this is a little bit junior for me, or this is, you know.
Bingo. And this everybody should do. Go to salary.com. Use their salary calculator for that city, because every city has a cost of living adjustment. Another response to that question is, based upon my research on salary.com or whatever, the salary range for this position is between 90 and 100. It shows that you are insightful and that you know your industry and you know what you're worth.
What really ticks people off on the other side, so we can tell people, okay, when you're talking about this, don't bring this up.
Something that would tick them off would be if they really need to know the compensation and you keep going around trying not to give it to them. If you're not really wanting to be upfront with how much you made and they have asked you several times, that will tick them off.
I'll tell you what, listeners, if you still cannot get a job after listening to George and Doris Aguirre tell you all their tips, you're lame, because there's no reason why anybody should not have success, even with just the tips we've been able to give them in this short time. So I want to thank you both very much for joining us on Jackie's Vida Loca. I hope you will become avid listeners, and I really, really appreciate all the insights and your time today. Thank you so much for joining us.
If they want to go to the websites, a lot of these tips are within our websites, which is www.dcaprosearch.com. They can go to the Candidate tab and the Career Center tab, and they will get quite a few of those tips there. With Optimal Business Solution, it's www.obsworld.com.
This is great information. I will make sure everybody gets this information and uses it, and hopefully we will improve people's ability to get and keep a fantastic job. Thank you for being on Jackie's Vida Loca. George and Doris Aguirre, I really appreciate you, and thank you so much. Have a fantastic day.
Thank you, Jackie.
Thank you, Jackie.
By listening to Doris Aguirre, the principal of DCA Pro Search, and George Aguirre, the president of Optimal Business Solutions, friends and colleagues that can help you land a fantastic job. So if literally you're doing absolutely nothing today but listening to this radio show, I want you to download the show, re-listen to that interview, not just for self-gratifying reasons here, but because I want to help you get an amazing job and be happy. You know what? Work takes up so much of our daily lives, and we are in control of our futures. We are absolutely in control of our destiny. Besides the fact that our boss plays such a very big role, we want to have good, rewarding careers. And it's not just a job, it's a career. It's your life. It's your life, and your family's counting on you. You're counting on yourself, and that's the bottom line. So take control of your life and your destiny and do these things that can really help you. And I feel like so privileged that we have people like Doris Aguirre, who's been in the business for so long. And let me tell you, if you've never heard her name before, pay attention to it now, because she is somebody that can absolutely help you. Get on her website. She has so many tips there. In fact, get on her website, connect with her, tell her you heard her on the show, and ask her for her help. And submit your resume. Put yourself in the mix. And then George Aguirre, who has so much experience in dealing with candidates and forming candidates to be the strongest personal brand they can be. And, you know, when we talk about personal brand, it is not just one element of a brand. It's all elements of you that go to make a great personal brand. And everything, people, everything communicates. So whether it's your resume or how you present yourself visually or how you speak or all of the extracurricular things you do, even those things that you do on Facebook, that's your personal brand. And personal and professional, those lines blur all the time, especially given the fact that we live in the internet age where everything is everybody's business. And that goes for companies, that goes for individuals. So make sure that you're always nurturing your own personal brand. And even if you have a job, even if you have a job today, even if you have a job that you love today, you should always be nurturing that personal brand, because tomorrow you may be looking for a job and you want to make sure that that brand is completely healthy and intact so that you can get yourself the best damn job that's out there for you, even better than you even would have dreamed of. So I thank you. I thank you guys so much for listening every week to Jackie's Vida Loca. Here we are on Thursdays, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. We are with you every step of the way in your life. And you know what? We're going to have fun along the way. So thank you so much, New York, Miami, Los Angeles, Texas, Puerto Rico, and everybody in between for listening to Jackie's Vida Loca. We will see you again next time.
Adios, everybody. Join me again next Thursday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, for the craziest Latino mommy on Jackie.